And welcome back, everybody, to the second hour. We're talking with Richard Dolan about the breakaway civilization, his new book, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind, and also the Secret Space Program Conference, the upcoming event that I hope we will see you all at, of course. So let's just pick up a couple of more items here that we were kind of talking about, and then we're going to move on to some of the other interesting other aspects of what you discuss in the book and whatnot. But I wanted to clarify as well, again, you're talking about at this stage anyway, at some point it was a U.S., you know, primarily U.S.-run military kind of operation. This has transformed throughout the years. Today, we're probably most likely more talking about an international collaboration, people who have, you know, above the nation states. They do not have, for example, America's best interest at heart. Yet at the same time, what I'd like to clarify a little bit more is that the primary funding seems to be coming from the American people in tax money, correct?
I think in large part, yes, unless it's coming from illegal sources like financial fraud or narcotics trafficking, which has always been a very, very big part of the black budget world. It never gets much attention, but banking fraud, money laundering has been a part of the intelligence community operations for throughout the entire 20th century, certainly through the Second World War onward. So there's that part of it too. But yeah, your point about America being first among equals, I think, is still key. The way it really works is the American military is the police force of those groups that control the wealth of the world. So they get control of the U.S. system. They get control of U.S. foreign policy. They dictate, you know, American wars, whether they're going to be in Iraq or Afghanistan or anywhere else. You go into Iraq because, you know, at the most conventional level, you want to take control of over $30 trillion worth of oil that was under the ground in Iraq, which they've done. They've done that, and that's courtesy of the U.S. military. They've taken control of trillions of dollars worth of mineral wealth under the ground in Afghanistan. You know, the same thing. So that's what the U.S. military is for. That is the purpose of the United States military. It has nothing to do with national defense. That's long gone. They don't care about that. That is utterly irrelevant to the equation.
And the contracts for the minerals is going to be handed out to, again, international corporations, not to Americans, again, who paid for that, right?
Exactly. So if your Americans are really are taking it. they're getting it both ways.
They're getting the blame for it and the paying for it. Yeah, exactly.
And they're giving it away, right? Yeah. So that's just how it is. And I mean, the American military is the best military in the world by far. And if you've controlled all of this power and wealth, that's the military that you want working for you. And that's what they've been able to get for a long, long time. So, but within the broader classified community, and particularly in control over the secrets relating to UFOs, I think it's the same principle. America is the first among equals. Think about, the Global Electronic Data Sharing Program. It used to be known as Echelon. Who knows what name it goes by today. But in that, you've got a situation where the NSA of America and the NSA equivalents of UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and who knows what else, they all collect and share electronic data. But within that structure, the US NSA is absolutely top dog. And it's the same within all aspects of the classified world. America's intelligence community absolutely dominates that of its allies. And they can't say boo without America knowing about it. The only nation that really has a kind of relationship truly on an equal basis might be that of the UK, where there's a very, very close collaboration, always has been. But really, it's America's game, and they run it. So, like, for example, if you were the president of Brazil and you thought, I'm going to tell the world about the UFO reality because I've got a few secrets here, you'd better be really, really careful about how you go about your business. Because first of all, you know the NSA is spying on you. And if you try to make a move without America's approval, you got to be sure bad things could very well happen to you. So I think there's a lot of intimidation of global leaders around the world by the U.S. power structure, and you know, which is simply working hand in glove with the financial power structure that controls it.
Well, exactly. Blackmail, everything else, probably quite a bit of controlled opposition, et cetera, trying to give, you know, the theatrics of geopolitics
yes.
is part of this.
Absolutely,
too.
Absolutely, yes. In fact, we mentioned Catherine Austin Fitz before the break. I love Catherine. She's one of my very closest colleague friends around there. I've talked with her a number of times, and she has made the statement that any political leader who gets to a certain level of prominence is explicitly blackmailed and controlled by whether it's NSA or CIA or FBI, who've got the goods on them. So like any illicit porn site that a politician's gone to, or any kind of prostitute or male or female that they've been to, any other thing that they've done is is explicitly used over them to control them. And if that's not sufficient, then there, you know, more extreme measures can certainly be taken. But usually that's enough. They've got these people completely under their thumb and their control.
Yep, I believe you're right. Now, you mentioned minerals. We're basically talking about resources, things that potentially could be used for, you know, new, not only, you know, the building of, you know, let's say computers, advanced technology, et cetera, materials, right, et cetera. What do you think that their objective and a mission is like here? Because again, that we have a potential interface between geopolitical events and the secret space program idea, right, that we're talking about, the building of infrastructure, bases, maybe, ships, et cetera. How connected is this? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked this. You know, one of the reasonable objections that someone who hasn't studied this might have is, well, hell, if you're building flying saucers, you're building this huge fleet, where the hell are they? Why are you not using them in the wars?
Exactly, yeah.
It would certainly be useful. I had a discussion and a debate with Colonel John Alexander. Some people may know his name, and he made exactly this point to me. He said, well, you know, if they're building this, then they're not in evidence in any of the arsenals that we have. And that's exactly right. They are not. So here's my answer. If you are developing technology that is so advanced and so classified that that showing it to the world would take down your petroleum industry, which this would do, then you must not use it in any ordinary geopolitical context. Something as pedestrian as mere warfare with Iraq, that's not important enough for this. You know, back in the 1980s, a perfect example of what I'm talking about was when the United States bombed Libya back in 1986. And some people may recall that. And what happened was the U.S. sent in some F-111 fighter aircraft to bomb and they tried to kill Muammar Gaddafi back then, and they failed. The U.S. had at that time operational stealth fighters. The F-117A Nighthawk, this stealth fighter, which was radar evasive. And in theory, they could have used that. And maybe that would have been more effective. They didn't use it. And the reason they didn't use the stealth fighter for that operation is because its existence was classified. And that's how it works. You have a particular piece of equipment. You have a particular piece of weaponry. And its use is authorized for certain types of scenarios. So if you have a technology that is developed from, let us say, alien sources, I'm going to tell you right now, its use is not going to be for mere geopolitical conflict. Its use is going to be, in my view, to deal with exactly that reality. So that technology is too important to risk its exposure for normal warfare. And the United States doesn't need it for normal warfare. The U.S. weaponry that we have is more than sufficient to lay waste to any part of the world. They don't need flying saucers to pulverize Afghanistan into dust. You know, they don't need that to terrorize people around the world with drone strikes. There's no need for that. So they use it explicitly to deal with off-world matters. They use it, I think, explicitly to deal with whatever way they are able to deal with the presence of these other beings that are here in our part of the galaxy.
I've heard stories, whether these are true or not, I don't know. Some have allegedly shown footage of some of the evidence for this as well, but that the occasional testing has been done in the military theater scenarios of for example, advanced you know, beam weaponry or things like this, that certain vehicles and the oppositional forces have actually been melted and things like that. There is that possibility that it might have experimented a little bit, but it doesn't mean that it's part of the regular military lineup, you know?
Right, exactly. And I think that, I mean, I've heard references of this as well. It could very well be true, I don't know. But that would be the way you would do. You would introduce it on a very limited basis and you know, develop it. And if you're able to develop it in a way that's not threatening to the financial and infrastructure that we have, then so be it, then they can do it. As long as they can find ways to build these things and monetize and make money off of them, they'll have them out in the open as much as they're able to. But for something as revolutionary as electrogravitics, revolutionary propulsion, revolutionary sources of energy, that's still too tricky for them. And it's worth it for them to reserve that for the most classified topic that exists, and that is the presence of these other beings. I mean, this goes back to there was a document from 1950 by a Canadian scientist and government official named Wilbert Smith. And I'm here doing a tour of Canada, so I've been thinking a lot about some of the Canadian aspects of this phenomenon. But Wilbert Smith was kind of a genius who was kind of buried away in the Canadian government back in the 1950s and had connections with select American officials who were very, very prominent. And in 1950, Smith had a conversation with an American scientist named Robert Sarbacher, who said to him explicitly that the UFO topic was more highly classified than that of the hydrogen bomb, which in 1950, that was extremely classified, and that this was significantly higher than that. So this goes way back. This phenomenon is the most classified subject. And therefore, I think the technology associated with it is also going to be used in the most rarefied way. So you're not going to see flying saucers, doing drone strikes. They don't need that anyway. So yep. They've got other technology for that.
All right. There's another topic here, basically, I wanted to try to get into a little bit more. We have a lot of funny things happening around us, everything from UFO cults to the new age interface, you know, what you call the guru effect, kind of attached to this entire field. We've been certainly participatory in investigating a lot of these subjects. That shouldn't be confused with the endorsement or promotions of the subjects. Of course, inquiry is not endorsement, but you kind of come out the other end and realize that there's a lot of hot air around these kinds of topics, and you come out the other end kind of disappointed and tend to kind of move along the way. Although there seems to be some that are more or less stuck there. I think this is kind of just an artifact, I guess, of the contact and abduction field overall. How do you approach these kinds of subjects?
Yeah, I mean, one thing we have to say relating to this whole subject is that it is a very, very tough subject. I mean, forget the political and cover-up obfuscation that surrounds it. Even if we had none of that, if this were simply way out in the open and no problem investigating it, it would still be hard. It would still be a very difficult subject that I believe is at the very limits of our own understanding and our ability to understand. I'm not saying we can never grasp the totality of this phenomenon, but we may be hard-pressed ever to grasp the totality of it. It's quite possible. You know, you think about the way our brains function and the way their minds might function and the kinds of levels of reality that we may never be able to comprehend, and that's what we're dealing with. So there's this. It's very difficult. One of the aspects of this phenomenon is it's a very subjective aspect, which is that there are individuals who have been convinced, I mean, this is for years and years and years, that they have received telepathic communications from other beings, non-human beings or alien beings. Sometimes they'll call them downloads or whatever. And, you know, it's very easy for us to dismiss that out of hand. And I think that at one point I used to dismiss those out of hand, and I don't dismiss them all out of hand now. It's very clear to me that, you know, what we call reality is very complex, and that one component of it is, I believe, kind of mind-to-mind communication that does happen in a number of cases of UFO ET contact. So I don't rule that out. On the other hand, we still don't really know how to verify such types of communication. I mean, if I said to you that I had some such communication like that, how could I prove that to you so that you would be satisfied? The only way would be maybe to give you exact predictive information or scientific information that could be confirmed independently. And to my knowledge, this has not happened with any such kind of telepathic contact. So that's a problem there. Not saying it doesn't exist, but it's problematic in confirming it. And then the other side of it is that I think it's very evident that a lot of the people who've claimed to have this type of contact are just blowing hot air. I don't know how else to put it. They are deluded, or they're lying, or they want attention, or, you know, who knows whatever reasons there may be. So there's a lot of this. There's a lot of smoke that's blowing through this field. And it does make it difficult. And on top of that, you've got people who are explicitly positioning themselves as kind of like gurus. Absolutely the case. And, you know, when you have a phenomenon that affects so many people in such a deep way, and people are affected by this deeply, many of them want answers and they look to people for answers. And they think, oh, that researcher, he knows or she knows what's going on, and I'll listen to that person. And there are some people out there who just, they're all too willing to be the center of attention and to be the guru and to have those people hanging on their every word. For my part, I can tell you, I just was asked this question yesterday. I had an interviewer who, because I'm here on tour going across Canada in this big old RV, and I'm meeting lots of people. And one asked me, he literally said, "You're a rock star in this field. How do you feel about that? And is there a problem with egos permeating the field?" And I said, there's a lot going on there. I said, first of all, I will never, ever, don't ever refer to me as a rock star. I don't want that. Despite being on tour in an RV, right? Doing a 12-city tour. But no, I don't look at myself that way. I never want to. The key for every single researcher, this includes yourself, this includes me, this includes anyone else who puts themselves out there, the moment you start seeing yourself as more important than the subject matter, just give it up and don't bother doing it anymore. There's no point. I'm in this field because I believe that there's something there that I want to learn. And if I'm able to communicate that to other people, then excellent. That's what I want to do. It's never about me. I have been wrong in my life about many, many things, and I reserve the right to be wrong in the future, by the way, because we're all on a journey together. And the moment that I put myself ahead of everyone else is the moment that my whole mission fails. When I do a conference, when I do a lecture circuit, anything, I can tell you, I learn vastly more from the attendees than they could ever learn from me. There are so many brilliant people in this field, and just because they don't speak publicly doesn't mean that they don't know anything. They know a lot. And so I feel very lucky, very fortunate that I can get to meet these people, because for whatever reason, they want to hear me talk. So fine. That's something that I get out of it. I get to meet them. But yeah, the ego part of it is something that's just a lifelong journey. It's very easy to want those pats on the back. It's very easy to kind of crave the attention, and it can be addictive. I mean, I've seen that with myself, and I have to be careful. It's wonderful to get positive attention from people who say wonderful things to you. Sure. But, that's not what it's about. That's not ever what I want this to be about. It's about learning. It's about communicating.
What about if we look at some of the people in that come along, I guess, in the field? I mean, we have injections potentially I guess I could refer to them as experiments. I mean, we have the aspect of military abductions. There is a mind control aspect to this potential.
Oh, yes.
Otherwise,
yes.
Social engineering. I mean, I think even the CIA asset turns McKenna actually talked about how the government experimented with alleged abduction victims and inserted them into the different, you know, UFO environments out there. What's your take on this?
Yes. First of all, military abductions, absolutely. It's real. That happens. In my opinion, there's no question about it. You have people who are being taken, sometimes not by human agencies, but often, I think, by human agencies. And I've been exploring this now for more than a decade, really looking into certain specific cases. I've interviewed a number of people, not all of whom have been public, you know, about what they've gone through. So I think what's happening is that, my personal opinion is that there are certain individuals who are of interest. How are they being tracked? It's a good question. I don't know. Is it through a genetic bloodlines, as some researchers have wondered? Is it because they have special gifts? Are they psychically gifted and that makes them of interest? Maybe. I think that's really possible. But these are individuals who, and by the way, to my experience, somewhat more women than men, although there are some men, but many women. And I think partly because of their breeding capability. I think because they can make babies,
right?
But a number of these women who are gifted, I think, are of interest. I've spoken to a number of women who have told me accounts of meeting with men who know things about them explicitly that no stranger is ever going to know, making it clear that they've been monitored. This is a few people. People who have had experiences where they seem to have been taken for certain periods of time by military agencies without having memory of it. So there's this thing going on. And a few of these cases are pretty well known. I have my own radio show. It's the Richard Dolan Show. And on that, I did an interview with a woman named Niara Isley, who was a former U.S. Air Force and had 3 months of missing time from her period in the Air Force in the early 1980s. So there's some of this that goes on. Now, whether they're inserting explicit alien abduction memories, maybe that's what they're doing. I think that we have a lot more to learn on this. But there's certainly a case where, when we say military, I'm saying this very loosely. I don't really know that these are a formal part of the U.S. military, U.S. Army or Air Force or anything like that. I think we're talking deep black budget, deeply clandestine, very likely privatized, kind of off the grid, as it were. But they are doing this. It's complex. And Henrik, I could do stories and stories of totally human looking players that I don't really think were human. I mean, this right. We're going right off in the deep end here, but I'll tell you very, very quickly. I mean, I did an interview with a retired U.S. colonel who told me of an encounter that he had with his wife and a psychic friend of theirs. They were just having a fun time in a Las Vegas casino. And the friend of theirs grabbed his arm and said, "Stop, don't go any further." And she pointed to this woman who is drop-dead gorgeous blonde woman. This is a Las Vegas casino, so you get that there. But the psychic said, "She's not like us. She's not like us." And she got scared, and she and his wife went down the escalator to get away. He stayed. He looked at the woman, and he said to me, a moment later, he heard her thinking in his head. And she said, essentially like a police officer on the beat, saying, "Nothing to see here. Keep it moving. You got nothing to do with me." And he was stuck. He's like, "What? What is that?" He said moments later, she was joined by an equally beautiful blonde man, perfectly dressed. I mean, they were obviously together. They start walking. He couldn't hear them after that in his mind, but they walked toward the escalator. And he thought, "I'm going to talk to them." And he didn't. They walked right by him, and he got behind them on the escalator, and then he heard them in his mind again. And he said their conversation was essentially, "Yeah, he can hear us. No big deal. He's not important. Ignore him. He's not part of the program or whatever." I'm not kidding. And meanwhile, in fact, he's telling me the story, and his wife was with him, and she was laughing. She said, "It's so true." And my friend and I were peeking behind the slot machine. We were so scared, and she was actually laughing as she told me this. The couple got to the bottom of the escalator and just walked off. Here's a creepy aftermath to this story. So the psychic friend of theirs was also someone who did hypnotherapy, and they said, "You can regress me, and maybe I can remember more memories of what these two were saying." So they agree to go to her house a day or two later, and she's in a nice, quiet California neighborhood. Every time he lays down to kind of relax, they hear loud construction noise outside, jackhammers and helicopters and whatever. Every time they go to look, there's nothing there. It got so that they were not able to do the regression, but he said, "No problem. I'll be back next month, and maybe we can do it then." And she said, "Fine." A month later, he calls her a day before he goes there. He says, "Hey, I'm coming into town. Maybe we can do that regression." She says, "What regression?" He says, "Well, from last month. Don't you remember? We were at Las Vegas and we saw that couple." She says, "What couple? I don't know what you're talking about." So it was as if someone wiped her memory. It was, now what agency is doing that? I'll tell you one other story that's related to this. And this is related to, all of this deals with who are these people? I did an interview with a man who's a truck driver. He's in his late 50s now, but 30 years ago, he was a truck driver in Ohio. He lived in a condo he had a couple of friends who were a married couple, and they used to hang out together. They decided to go fishing one night, and they took a fourth person who was a friend of theirs that he had not known. They're out in a fishing boat in this tiny little lake in Ohio, and they see this, it's nighttime, they see this object, bright object, zigzagging and getting closer, and they're like, "What the hell is this?" The next thing they remember, the next thing he remembers, they're on the shore in a panic. because this object is directly over them and they're screaming, they're coming to get us. The object takes off and goes away. And then the next thing he says, they're missing 3 hours of time after this. And then he says to his friends, we are not supposed to talk about this. If any of you ever talk about this again, I'll call you a liar and I'll never be your friend again. And then in the aftermath, right. So obviously, whatever agency took them implanted something in their mind and said, don't you dare talk about this. You're not going to talk about this. And this, I think, is common. This is common. The aftermath of that, which is confuses the hell out of me, to be honest with you, is he had to go to work the next day. He comes back at the end of that day. He goes to knock on the door of his friends to talk about this whole event, I think, or to just be with them, I suppose. And they're not home. And he discovers that they moved out. They moved out in like the space of 1 day or perhaps 2 days. And he never heard from them again. And I'll tell you this, when this man was telling me his story, I had to have him calm down 5 or 6 times because I thought he was going to die of a heart attack. He was hyperventilating so badly. He was so nervous. Mm. It had been 30 years. So my question is, I think anyone's question is, well, who the hell took these guys? Who forced this couple to move out? Was this a military operation? Was this not a military operation? Was this ET? You know, I mean, we're dealing with some very, very complex realities here. And then there's one other story, and I'll just do a very quick sketch of this, but this is the Ingo Swann story. Ingo Swann was a great remote viewer, and I happened to know him. He died about a year ago. Yeah. He was very famous. And back in the 1970s, Ingo was doing a great deal of remote viewing work for different groups within the U.S. intelligence community because he was famous and they all wanted to use his powers, his gifts. He had a series of encounters with a man that he came to know as Axelrod, who was in a very, very deep kind of remote facility and had Ingo do all this type of remote viewing work on the moon and other things. Axelrod was always accompanied by two identical twins who weren't just like twins. They were like, they seemed to be like clones of each other. They were like one person, but they were two guys. And it was the very, very studied opinion of someone close to Ingo, high level intelligence person that I got to know, that Axelrod and those twins were really not truly human, that they were human looking, but they were not us. And what they were doing was counterintelligence on America's remote viewing program to find out, now that this new remote viewing program is in place, how vulnerable are we to them?
Right. Yeah.
So in other words, when we're talking about abductions by human beings, I'm going to be honest and tell you, I don't really know who the hell these guys are. Are they U.S. Army? I don't think so. U.S. Air Force? I don't think so. They could be deep black budget clandestine. Yes. Or they could be something beyond that. They could be humans working for them, whoever them happen to be. Or they could just be them. They could be these other highly telepathic human-looking beings that I do believe are here among us. So it's complex, and I sure would like to have an accurate scorecard so I can tell all the players apart.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's just so bizarre. They seem to have these experiences in the strangest locations in some cases, on very mundane issues. Of course, we don't know. This might just be the run-in, right? They might be on a recon mission. They might actually do something that's really important. I'm thinking, for example, about that blonde couple. You know, about why do they show up at the slots machine in Vegas? You know, it's just right. What?
Well, I have another story of an equally beautiful blonde couple from 1960s that were seen in church. A woman told me this story, same exact thing as the colonel. And this is on the other side of the country where I heard this story. Western Pennsylvania, woman's in church, 1960s. She's a teenager there with her mother. Everyone knew each other in this town. And this blonde couple, gorgeous supermodel blonde couple, sits in front of her. And she's fascinated by them because they look so amazing and they're dressed so perfectly. And then she hears them in her mind. She told me the exact same thing the colonel told me. And in fact, what she heard them thinking was, well, we appear to be fitting in reasonably well here, except for the girl who can hear us behind us. And that's literally what she said to me. She couldn't hear another thing from, I know it sounds crazy, right? She couldn't hear another thing from them for the rest of the church services. And then they got out really fast, and she followed them, even though her mother was screaming after her, "Get back here." Her mother was oblivious to everything. She chases them. She sees them walking across a field toward a wooded area. And then she stopped because she saw this very tall, very intimidating, kind of like a man in black dressed. You know, he looked like Lurch from the TV show The Addams Family. That's exactly what she said. And it scared her so much that she stopped. The couple walked by him into the woods. He turned around and followed them in. And that's her story. These people, I mean, they just keep coming. And a skeptical scientist would say, well, that doesn't constitute proof, which, okay, fine, it doesn't. But what do you do when these stories keep coming at you? There are so many people around this world, I'm convinced, who've had strange encounters like this. And who do they tell? They tell no one until they meet a researcher like myself who they know won't laugh at them. So what was that blonde couple? Well, I don't know. I think they're not from our civilization. That's what I would guess.
Very interesting. Yeah, I wonder if they're kind of as what you said before, another human faction potentiality. It might be another a previous, you know, breakoff or something like that, or even who knows, even a more recent one. But the development has occurred. Maybe this is technology that they have to their advantage. They have tremendous, nanotechnological, microphones and scanners and all kinds of stuff. We don't know.
It could be a breakaway civilization operating. It could be that an alien group scooped up a bunch of humans thousands of years ago and enhanced them and genetically modified them. And who knows? You know, there's all kinds of possibilities. And those people who look human may have less in common with us than they do with aliens, for all I know. I don't know. But these stories are out there. And again, what they do is they signify something very, very strange. But I feel that I've diverted us because we were going to talk about the New Age movement in ufology. I feel a little bad that I kind of moved us off target there.
That's all right. It's very interesting stories. I mean, we all want to know when the evil blondes are going to take over the world.
Well, you know, I have to ask myself, would I rather be dominated by ugly grays or reptoids or the Nordic superstars? I guess I might choose the Nordics, except that might give me a real inferiority complex.
Right, exactly. That's funny. Now, so do you feel that the field has been clouded by New Age dogma? Or how would you explain that?
I think short answer, yes. The longer answer is that it's a little more complex because there are certain concepts that we would call New Age that I think are valid and that are worthy of our attention. But I think in the short answer, I recently really devoured the outstanding web series by the author Dave McGowan called, this is a long title, The Strange But Mostly True Story of Laurel Canyon and the Birth of the Hippie Generation.
I just had an email correspondence with him, and we're going to have him on. Great. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, thanks. Great.
Yeah, well, I think his work is very, very significant. And, the short version of what he's talking about is simply that Laurel Canyon is sleepy little outskirts of Los Angeles in the 1960s. Nothing going on there, apparently. And suddenly, many, many future rock stars descend there, and they become stars through there. I mean, whether it's the Byrds or Frank Zappa or the Doors or the Mamas and the Papas and many, many others, and a fellow named Charlie Manson. Some people may have heard of him. The introduction of LSD on a massive scale coming out of there, a lot of occultism going on there. And then, of course, what McGowan described is that the existence since the 1940s of a secret U.S. military video studio larger than anything in Hollywood. So then when you find a lot of these rock stars coming there as young people, many of them were Navy brats or out of the intelligence community, out of Georgetown in the D.C. area, a lot of them. So his question is very simple. What the hell's going on there? And his hypothesis, and I believe that I agree with him, is that to some extent, that the hippie movement was an attempt to disable the active, viable peace movement that was just then spreading across the United States. You know, a peace movement by people with short hair and eyeglasses and little pocket protectors, and they were on the U.S. campuses, and they were genuinely opposed to the war in Vietnam, and they were for civil rights and things like that. And they were effective. And what happens with the hippies, as he points out, It's all about sex and drugs and rock and roll and self-absorption and gazing at your navel and basically narcissism.
Yeah.
And what that does, and he has a quote, I think, from Abby Hoffman, who said something like, yeah, you know, one day we've got this active peace movement. The next day, all these hippies are here to mess everything up. What the hell just happened? And that's what happened. That's what happened. And now I think that's a viable argument. Now let's look at the New Age movement. All right. And I think we see a lot of the same types of patterns here where, you know, one thing, and I think I mentioned this in my recent book, I had a bit of a critique on this. When you look at the New Age movement, whether it's in the UFO community or beyond, one thing it is not political. It does not promote true activism. And part of it is this idea that, you know, you can't have negativity in your mind because if you bring in negative thoughts and you make yourself into negativity and it's not healthy. But here's the problem with that, all right? We're in a situation in this war, and this goes beyond UFOs. This is everything, where there is an active war, and it is happening. And there's a very small group of people who want to own all the water. They want to own all the food. They want to own all the advanced technology and classify it so that we can't get it. They want to own everything. They probably want to own the human genome and all the DNA. They want to own everything.
Yeah.
And that's a war. And if we are not prepared to fight that war, and if we're just busy gazing our navels and focusing on loving, focusing on Christ consciousness, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but if that's the extent of it and we're not organizing to fight, I mean, really to fight, then I'm telling you, we're screwed.
That's
and
right.
So the New Age movement is, in that sense, it is a. I do look at it as a grand distraction from what we really need to be focusing on. Very much like how McGowan argued the hippie generation was in the late '60s. So, now is that the case with every person who's involved in the New Age movement within ufology or beyond? No, I mean clearly, I'm sure there are people who genuinely believe what they're doing. But is some of this an intelligence community operation? The answer is yes, yes, of course some of it is. Absolutely some of it is. One of the bits of research I came across when several books ago, I think when I was doing volume 2 of UFOs in the National Security State, I was doing an analysis of the attempted assassination of Reagan. His shooter was John Hinckley Jr. Hinckley Jr. wasn't just some crazy guy who was in love with Jodie Foster trying to impress her. No, no, no. John Hinckley Jr. was the son of John Hinckley Sr., who was a big wheel in Republican Party operations and was a close friend of George Bush, vice president. But not only that, this is in the research of the late Jim Keith. John Hinckley Sr. ran one of those many CIA, quote, churches that they like to run. This was called World Vision, Inc., where you have a lot of apparent links to mind control, New Age philosophy, and the like. It's a very bizarre connection. And this sort of thing, this has gone, you know, you have rumors and connections of like Jim Jones of Guyana, the
right.
Guyana massacre,
exactly. Yeah.
To the CIA. That was kind of a New Agey sort of thing. And this, it just keeps going on and on. You can find a lot of these. So the CIA has had some kind of bizarre connection to creation of cults and a connection to the New Age movement. So to what extent, and here's the question within the UFO field, the UFO subject is one that is intrinsically political, and a lot of people don't realize it, but it is, and yet it has been infested, maybe that's the right word, with a tremendous amount of New Age philosophy. You know, people going to the conferences wearing their white muslins and their little quartz crystals and pyramid rings, and I mean, it's it's fine as far as it goes, and some of these are lovely people. I love some of them. But the problem is that this is apolitical. It's anti-political. And it ultimately, I feel, is a distraction from the main line, which is fighting the system and prying open those secrets so that we can really truly remake ourselves into a better world.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. This is a very interesting aspect. I mean, just the basic idea that if we do not stand up in some way and trying to prevent the development and the destruction of civilization, pretty much, that we're witnessing right now. This is a known tactic. The enemy is trying to prevent, you know, the opposition from putting up any kind of resistance. It's a known warfare tactic. I mean, and this pacification through, you know, any means necessary, through social engineering, through using, you know, psychology or drugs, LSD, what have you. This is even creating cultural and moral relativity, et cetera. I mean, this is what they do, you know?
I agree. And through television programming and through
certainly,
things like symbolism and just all the things that create a zombie nation, a zombie world, all of this is explicitly done. So, I mean, there's been a deliberate dumbing down of the world. Certainly in my poor country, in the United States, this has been happening a pace for a long time. And it just breaks my heart. And anyone who looks at it, I think it's a horrible, it's a tragedy. And so that's a big part of it. But then to the extent that the new age philosophy has gotten in there, I'm not saying it's a 100% negative thing. I don't believe all of it is negative, but I do think a large portion of it has had a negative effect on my field of research, which is the UFO phenomenon.
Yeah, exactly. It makes it feel that it's blocking a little bit of the of a kind of a more, well, I mean, a straight up empirical scientific kind of analysis of the field, right? I mean, that this is in the age we're in today, specifically within the New Age movement, this is somehow kind of like a resented methodology because of the, you know, past implications or something like that. I mean, it's developed for a reason. Yeah. It's a pretty good idea of using this.
And we're not, you know, if you were to listen to every bit of channeled information on this subject, you'd be a very confused person because these people don't agree anyway. You know, the history of channel, whether it's Ashtar Command up to Bashar today or, you know, any of the others that are out there, there's a lot of this channeled information that, you know, people refer to. And it's pretty damn confusing.
Yeah. Well, why do you think people are so attracted to it? Because it seems to go a long way, you know?
Right. I mean, there's Zeta Talk. There's Jay-Z Knight who does Ramtha. And I mean, it just keeps going.
Yeah.
How do you know what's true? Well, I think people, a couple of reasons. First of all, I mean, God bless them, but a lot of people are just not, they don't have a lot of education. They just don't. They work 40, 50 hours a week. They, you know, feeding the machine. They come home. They're tired. They have no time really to delve into these matters and to do this the way that it deserves. And they just... they know that there's something wrong with their society. They understand that. And you know, a lot of these individuals, these channelers or these other people who claim inside knowledge, you know, from unknown sources and all that, they sound like they know what they're talking about. And unfortunately, I think that it's common that a lot of people they're looking for leaders. They're looking for, they want a guru. They want someone that they can place their trust in. So they're willing to give it up. I see it every day.
And then want something new, you know, because short attention span, you want to have something that excites you, whatever. You have the general environment of anti-intellectualism and people are largely run by their emotions as well these days, you know, which is a very, it can be a very dangerous thing to be.
There's the guru phenomenon. You know, there's a very excellent documentary just a year or two ago called Kumare, Kumare. And it's about this guy from New Jersey who's of Indian descent from the Indian subcontinent. And he grew up he was a skeptical guy with religion and he didn't take any of that stuff seriously. But he decided to pretend that he was a guru. So he grew his hair long, he grew a beard. This actually happened. He got two women who were working with him and they go out to Arizona. And he got the Indian accent that he remembered from his grandmother and he studied some yoga. And it sounds like he's kind of an asshole, but he actually wasn't. He turned out to be a pretty good guy. And he realized early on that these people like gravitated to him and they're genuinely good people. They just are looking for answers. And then his whole problem was how to extricate himself from this. And his message, though, is you must find the guru within. And people were like, wow, that's so amazing. But, of course, he was their guru because he looked like the guru. He had the long hair. He had all the trappings that they wanted. And at the very end of this documentary, he goes in front of them. He shaved, he cut his hair. He wore a lot of New Jersey clothes. And he was like a regular guy. And a number of people were absolutely furious, and they just stormed out. And a few stayed and forgave him. But that's this phenomenon. We there are many people they want. When I watched that and I saw how people were relating to him, I can tell you I saw a lot of that in how some people relate to me. When I'm out there, I see this in people's eyes. They want someone who's got answers. And, you know, in his case, I mean, he got into it basically fraudulently, and then with some integrity got out of it. But it's a widespread phenomenon, and I don't know how to fix that.
That's very interesting.
How people will actually become their own guru for real. I would like to see that. But
well, I agree with you. And let me guess, the primary audience there was Westerners, probably rootless, who have turned their back on their own heritage and their own culture, probably, and they're looking everywhere else except for their own past.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think that's actually true.
Yeah.
I mean, good people, just
looking
for answers. And there was a very, very strongly, like, extremely New Age component to all of that, obviously, where, you know, you find these people wanted kind of enlightenment. And that's the other thing. You ask, why do people go to this? I think, why do they look for these types of answers? I think in terms of spirituality, we're in a world where everything has gotten to be so bad. It's so bad. That I think at a deep soul level or deep inside level, I think many people realize this may not be easily fixable. So what do? They latch on to a kind of a magical solution. In the case of the buildup to December 21st, 2012, everyone talked about ascension, where the universe would flip cosmic switch, essentially. I mean, that's really what it was. You know, people were expecting the universe to just snap its fingers, and they would ascend. What is that? Go to heaven?
The rapture kind of thing, yeah.
Well, kind of a New Age version of the rapture.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that's what it is. But essentially an easy way to enlightenment, an easy way to heaven, an easy way to, you know, the next level, an easy way to get beyond the difficulties of being a human being, which is what we are. We're human beings, we wear skin, we grow old, and we die. And we have to struggle and we deal with all kinds of shit throughout our lives. And that's the human condition. And there are people who say, no, that's not, we want to go beyond that. And so they're looking for this answer because things seem so difficult. And there are always people willing to provide that answer. And people gravitate to it.
Well, exactly. You're right. I mean, and everyone needs a spiritual life, if you will. And I think what the big lie is here as well is that the fact that we have a spiritual past, all of us, we're just, you know, either we're told that it isn't there, or we're told lies about our history or heritage. I mean, in terms of education, we're talking about moral relativism, and we've been severed from our past, basically, with guilt and everything else, but specifically in the Western world. We've talked about this in many programs now in the last couple of months here, but just the way that how you create a rootless human being that are just, I mean, I see these, what you're talking about here, I see these as the initial experiments towards the ultimate one big experiment when, you know, whatever, they're going to send the big kahuna messiah or what have you, you know, to reel them all in a sense, right? So this has been little trickle down effects to see, okay, how bad is it out there? What can we do with them? And I think if we sever this connection, either willingly or through indoctrination and education and entertainment, what have you, then we are going to be much, much more easily controlled. And that's the danger in this as well.
Absolutely. I love where you're going with this. And to tie this in then to the greater phenomenon of the UFO issue and other intelligences that are here, let's, you know, if we're in a situation, if you think about Jungian psychology, what Jung often used to say was that human beings have a deep need for ritual, for like a ritualistic spirituality. And when you rip that out, then we look for it elsewhere, or we become vulnerable, or we find there's a kind of a spiritual lacking. And that's what's been happening. Like the traditional ritual system that had been in place for a long, long time has been kind of tossed aside. And the rituals now are the Super Bowl and you know, or music videos, or I mean, a completely turning upside down of the previous morality. So that's where our society is moving worldwide, and it makes us very like less and less able, I think, to meet the challenge of these other beings that are here, because we are rootless, and we're really losing touch with ourselves and with ourselves as ethical beings. If we are ever going to deal with these other beings in any way that's going to be meaningful and valuable, then we need to step up and get our top. We need to be at our top level.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in fact, what's happening is that we're devolving in terms of culture, in terms of even kind of intellectual aspirations of most people. We're just becoming dumbed down more and more and more. Yeah. So I think we're, and on the other hand, you get a lot of the people in the new age mindset are saying, no, consciousness is rising. We're having a higher consciousness. I mean, I hear this all the time.
Sure, me too.
And yeah. I look at these people, I think, where are you seeing this? I live in a neighborhood. I walk my dog every day. I talk to my neighbors, and they're lovely people. But listen, I'm telling you, I'm not seeing the evidence. And you go into the American public school system, and it's not there either.
No.
You go into the American university system, and it sure as hell is not there.
Yeah.
So where is it?
I agree.
You know, some intentional community in Ithaca, New York, or some, I mean, maybe, okay.
Well, how long have we not heard this now as well? How long are we going to wait, right, in this regard? It's this kind of perpetual just, you know, wait for it. It's going to come. There it is. We're almost there. No, it was not really 2012. It's 2016. Not really 2016. It's really 2020. You know, this is
That's
just
right.
going to go on and on and on. And
this is intentional manipulation. And there are a few self-appointed gurus who talk about this. And they're still talking like, oh, yeah, well, we just did pass through the galactic plan in 2012. And it's happening.
Yeah.
And how long is that going to take? I just think that this is non-science. Science is not our enemy.
No.
Science is not our enemy. And,
no.
and that doesn't mean that contemporary science has every answer on this. It doesn't, but it's not our enemy.
You use all the tools you can, you know, and science is a big one of them. It's gotten us pretty dark. I feel that it's like it's a rejection of all Western values because this is how we've been taught now in the Western world specifically. And that is doing us at this point a really great disservice. And it's being aided and implemented by New Age ideology and all these kind of, you know, cult fanaticism and everything else that comes with it. You know?
Well, I think that as a human being, I'm not simply a Westerner. I'm not an Easterner. I'm a human being, and I feel that there's a rich heritage in the Eastern as well as Western philosophy that we can all benefit from. So, you know, by embracing, I mean, one of my my core philosophies of life is probably a Zen philosophy, and it's been very important to me for many years. And but that doesn't mean that I would ever want to think to reject the heritage of Western civilization, which I've studied in great detail my whole life. So there's we're talking about a world heritage, but that certainly includes intellectual critical acumen, which you know, we get from the Western tradition. And an appreciation of science, which we get, that's the Western tradition. So these are very important. I agree with you totally. And we disregard them at our peril, And again, I don't know how much time I have left here. I love talking with you. But when we're looking at the grand phenomenon of this immense mystery, which we put this label of UFOs on, even though UFOs is a lot more than metal spaceships coming from another galaxy, but this grand phenomenon signifies something so important. Something is happening. There are other entities, I believe, that are here. That is what my research is telling me every day that I look into this. There is a clandestine human group that knows about this, that is benefiting from certain types of scientific knowledge that they're using for themselves. They do not want to share. And what it looks like to me, and I think it looks like to you, is that they are not interested in having an openness about this to share with the world. So what they're going to do instead is to kind of increase their control through mind control, and now through what might be another version of the breakaway civilization, which is a corporate international legal structure, which is truly breaking away from sovereign nations. So, for example, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement that was outed by WikiLeaks a few months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's creating just one more part of the spider web that's locking down a kind of transnational global legal structure to nail down, for example, intellectual property rights. So that, you know, here's the thing: if some smart person in India creates a free energy device and uploads that design, and maybe in 10 years I have the ability to use a 3D printer to create it, it may be illegal because he'll be violating a classified patent that's held by Lockheed Martin. I mean, exactly. You know, really think, yeah. This is what is the system that's coming into place.
Yeah.
So all of these things are coming into place to literally to create a global fascist totalitarian state. That is the goal. And beyond that, they want to create a race of superhuman robotic human beings that are basically going to rule over the rest of us. They want to do this. I am convinced they want to do this. And they would rather do that than share this radical technology, radical science with the rest of us to create a different kind of a world, a better world. And they, you know, part of the way to control is through mind control and dumbing down and media and things like that. So all of this is of peace. And again, the presence of these others, what is their role? Are they behind all of it?
Right.
Or is it like, you know, like David Icke says, you know, you got shape-shifting reptilians that are the bloodlines of, you know, the Royal House of England and so forth. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. They're part of the picture, but there's definitely this human dominated hierarchy that is absolutely intent on keeping things the way they are as long as possible.
And I think point being that we can take away from this, of course, here before we end for this time, Richard, is that we'll at least need to step up to the plate to even attain a level where we actually can comprehend what is going on. That would, I mean, that's what we're not doing at this stage in the way that things are going, you know?
Right. Absolutely right. And one of the problems in terms of research in my field of UFOs is that, you know, the organizations that have existed to undertake investigation, I mean, have just been so haphazard, and they've just been, there's no money. In the United States, you've got groups like MUFON, which, what does even MUFON do? I mean, the Mutual UFO Network, they've been around for almost 50 years. They have less than 2,000 members. Their website is, I mean, has been for most of this time has been just absolute garbage. I mean, they're just trying now to get it up to speed. In other words, they're doing nothing. They've got a handful of actual investigators who actually do anything whatsoever in terms of investigating. What we really need worldwide is a global connected infrastructure of genuine researchers who share information without intelligence community infiltration, which MUFON has had forever, that are genuinely working for people and for the dissemination of knowledge in a scientific way to figure this stuff out. And I believe it is possible. And frankly, when I look over the history, the modern social history of the UFO phenomenon, there have been a couple of instances where this attempt was made, and it's undermined. It gets undermined every time by the intelligence community. This happened in the old days with a group known as NICAP. It happened with a group known as APRO. These are American groups back in the 50s and 60s. And they were good. They had potential, but they were undermined out of the gate by the intelligence community. MUFON, same thing. So they become depoliticized, or they become hamstrung in one way or another. So what really is needed is a civilian grassroots true investigative organization that can grab this subject by the neck and not let go.
Well, very, very good, Richard. This has been
among many other things.
Well, hey, exactly. No, this is great. Thank you very much for a very enlightened conversation and a very well-rounded way of, you know, bringing this topic, a very difficult topic, but interesting topic, into the fold of everything else that we're seeing going on right now. And what we've been talking about here primarily is the book UFOs for the 21st Century Mind. And give us the websites again where people can pick up copies of the book and such.
Yeah, absolutely. And I there's one last thing I just want to mention about. My website is richarddolanpress.com. That's, you can find everything here. You can get links to my new book, which I'm very happy has gotten very nice reviews on Amazon. And as a writer, I could just say it's as important for me to be a good writer as a good researcher. I want all of my books to be as beautifully written as possible. That's something that I enjoy. I like the act of writing, and I want the books to be a great read as well as a great source of information. But richarddolanpress.com is where you'd go. Last thing I want to say on this is that it's important on one other deep, deep level, and that's the human level. There is something happening that affects
people so deeply, whether they've had a sighting that they cannot explain or an encounter that they do not know how to process, which is that they'll often go through the rest of their life and almost never will they talk about this to someone because it's so traumatic. Sometimes it's a very positive thing and they feel it's transformative, but whatever is going on, this is happening at a deep level that really matters. It's very important. And the fact that we as a civilization, as a society, are not allowing these people to feel free to talk about it, to me, that's criminal. That's a sign of oppression right there. This is an important thing happening. You know, someone sees an object that comes over their head, divides into four segments, and shoots off silently to the four cardinal points, and this has happened, and leaves you speechless for the rest of your life, and you can't talk about it. Well, that's not right.
Yeah,
there's something going on, and we need to be brave. People who have had experiences, I encourage them to be brave because it's only through bravery and communication that we're really going to have a chance to turn the situation around. And here's, I'm going to use the word consciousness to create a consciousness in our society that it's okay to talk about this and create change. And that's using the word in the right way. We want to create a new consciousness and awareness of this phenomenon so that people realize, hey, you know what? It's okay to talk about this.
Very well said. Very well said. RichardDolanPress.com. That is the website where you can read more, pick up copies of the book that we've been talking about. And yeah, guys and gals as well, come to the conference. I'd say this is the most cutting edge event of this year. If you want to find out more about that, secretspaceprogram.org. And you can find details from redeyesmembers.com as well in terms of the discount, ticket coupon codes that we have there for you as well. Thank you very much for your time today, Richard. Really appreciate this. We'll see you soon then, of course. And in the meantime, we say have a great rest of your tour up there in Canada, okay?
Oh, yes, indeed. I just want to give a really quick plug. I'm doing what's called the Modern Knowledge Tour of Canada. I've done the first half of it. I'm in Toronto now, and I'm moving west toward Vancouver. And if anyone wants to meet me in person, if you're in Canada, I'm doing a tour with also with Michael Tellinger and a number of other local speakers. Go to Modern Knowledge 2014.com and you can get the schedule and maybe get a ticket and I'll be happy to meet you.
Modern Knowledge 2014.com. All right, we'll have that linked up as well. Thank you so much, Richard.
Thank you, Henrik. It was a pleasure.
We have an interesting program coming up with Vahan Setyan next on Armenian culture and the Armenian genocide. We also have Joseph Atwill, David Matheson, John Rappaport, Dave McGowan, Felice Vinci, and William Mullen. For now, we say thank you so much for listening and for being a member. Take good care of yourself and your loved ones. Have a great day or evening wherever you're at, and we'll speak to you in just a few days again. Thank you, guys.